Cassette 4, Side 2.
You'll recall, Captain, the one brief message we got from Earth ordered us to go into hiding and keep our data secret, if possible. They also said we should use our own best judgment. Will our silence really delay the rediscovery of that Sargasso of lost ships for long, now that it's known to exist? No doubt half the patron lines in the five galaxies have swarms of scouts out now, trying to duplicate our discovery. They already know to look in a poorly linked, dim globular cluster. It's only a matter of time until they stumble across the right gravitational tide pool in the right cluster. Crydike thought that debatable. Galactics didn't often think like the Earthborn, and wouldn't conduct a search in the same way. Witness how long the fleet had lain undiscovered. Still, Metz was probably right in the long run. In that case, Doctor, why don't we simply broadcast the location to the library? It'll be public knowledge, and no longer our affair. Surely this important discovery should be investigated by a licensed team from the Institutes? Crydike was sarcastic, but he realized as Met smiled patronizingly that the human took him seriously.
You are being naive, Captain. The fanatics overhead care little about loose galactic codes when they believe the millennium is at hand. If everyone knows where the derelict fleet is, the battleground will simply move out there. Those ancient ships will be destroyed in a crossfire, no matter how powerful that weird protective field that surrounds them. And the Galactics will still strive to capture us, in case we lied.
They had arrived at the bridge lock. Crydike paused there. So, it would be better if only one of the contesting groups got the data and proceeded to investigate the fleet alone?
Yes. After all, what is that bunch of floating hulks to us? Just a dangerous place where we lost a scout boat and a dozen fine crewmen. We're not ancestor worshippers like those E.T. fanatics fighting over us, and we don't give a damn except intellectually whether the derelict fleet is a remnant from the days of progenitors, or even the returning progenitors themselves. It sure isn't worth dying over. If we've learned one thing in the last 200 years, it's that a little clan of newcomers like us Earth folk has got to duck out of the way when big boys like the Sorrow and Gubru get something up their snoots.
Dr. Metz's silvery hair waved as he bobbed his head for emphasis. A fizzing halo of effervescence collected amongst the strands. Crydike didn't want to go back to respecting Ignazio Metz, but when the man became passionate enough to drop his stuffy facade, he became almost likable. Unfortunately, Metz was fundamentally wrong. Crydike's harness clock chimed. He realized with a start how late it had become.
You make an interesting argument, Dr. Metz. I don't have time to go into it any further right now, but nothing will be decided until a full staff review by the ship's council. Does that sound fair?
Yes, I think so, although...
And speaking of the battle over Kithrop, I must go now to see what Takata Jim has to say.
He hadn't intended to spend so much time with Metz. He did not plan to miss his long-delayed exercise period. Metz seemed unwilling to let go.
Your mention of Takata Jim reminds me of something else I wanted to bring up, Captain. I'm concerned about feelings of social isolation expressed by some of the crewmen who happen to come from various experimental sub-breeds. They complain of ostracism and seem to be under discipline a disproportionate amount of the time.
You're referring to some of the Stenos, I assume?
Metz looked uncomfortable.
A colloquial term that seems to have caught on, although all Neofen are taxonomically tertiops amicus.
I have my jaws on the situation, Dr. Metz. Crydike no longer cared if he interrupted the mill. Subtle group dynamics are involved, and I am applying what I believe are effective techniques to maintain crew solidarity.
Only about a dozen of the Stenos showed disaffection. Krydyke suspected an infection of stress atavism, a decay of sapiency under fear and pressure. The supposed expert, Dr. Metz, seemed to think the majority of Streaker's crew was practicing racial discrimination.
"Are you implying that Takata Jim is also having problems?" Krydyke asked.
"Certainly not. He's a most impressive officer. Mention of his name reminded me because..."
Metz paused.
"Because he's a Stenos," Krydyke finished for him silently.
"Shall I tell Metz that I'm considering moving Hikahi into the vice captaincy? For all of Takata Jim's skill, his moody isolation is becoming a drag on crew morale. I cannot have that in my pod second." Krydyke sorely missed Lieutenant Yachapa Jean, who had died back at the shallow cluster.
"Dr. Metz, since you bring up the subject, I have noticed discrepancies between pre-launch psych profiles of certain members of the crew and their subsequent performance. I'm not a set of psychologists, per se, but in certain cases I am convinced the Fen did not belong on this ship in the first place. Have you a comment?"
Metz's face was blank.
"I'm not sure I know what you're talking about, Captain."
Krydyke's harness whirred as one arm snaked out to scratch an itch above his right eye.
"I have little to go on, but I think I'll want to invoke command privilege and look over your notes, strictly informally, of course. Please prepare them for..."
A tone interrupted Krydyke. It came from the comm link on his harness.
"Yes, speak," he commanded.
He listened for a few moments to a buzzing voice on his neural tap.
"Hold everything," he replied. "I'll be right up. Krydyke out."
He focused a burst of sonar at the sensitive plate by the door lock. The hatch hummed open.
"That was the bridge," he told Metz. "A scout has returned with a report from Tisht and Thomas Orley. I'm needed, but we will discuss these matters again, Doctor."
With two powerful fluke strokes, Krydyke was through the locked doors and on his way to the bridge. Ignacio Metz watched the captain go. "Krydyke suspects," he thought. "He suspects my special studies. I'll have to do something. But what?" These conditions of siege pressure were providing fantastic data, especially on the dolphins Metz had inveigled into Streaker's complement. But now things were starting to come apart. Some of his subjects were showing stress symptoms he had never expected. Now, in addition to worry about E.T. fanatics, he had to handle Krydyke's suspicions. It wouldn't be easy to put him off track. Metz appreciated genius when he saw it, especially in an uplifted dolphin. "If only he were one of mine," he thought of Krydyke. "If only I could take credit for that one."
Chapter 23. Jillian. The ships lay in space like serried rows of scattered beads, dimly reflecting the faint glow of the Milky Way. The nearest stars were the dim reddish oldsters of a small globular cluster, patient and barren remnants from the first epoch of star formation, devoid of planets or metals. Jillian contemplated the photograph, one of six that Streaker had innocently transmitted home from what had seemed an obscure and uninteresting gravitational tide pool, far off the beaten path. An eerie, silent armada, unresponsive to their every query. The Earthlings hadn't known what to make of it. The fleet of ghost ships had no place in the ordered structure of the five galaxies. How long had they gone unnoticed? Jillian put the holo aside and picked up another. It showed a close-up of one of the giant derelict ships, huge as a moon, pitted and ancient. It shimmered inside a faint lambency.